Now, the Larry O'Connor Show. 105.9 FM. At AM 630.
At the bottom of this hour, we're going to speak with a former Hill staffer who was actually instrumental in bringing down the Iron Curtain. But all he really wanted to do was write a play. And he's now, well, he's got his play produced. He's pursuing that life. And it's a fascinating topic, actually. We'll get with Michael Hammond at the bottom of this hour. Dr. Sebastian Gorka from the White House, President Trump's deputy assistant, will join us in the 5 o'clock hour to review the first 6 months of the Trump administration. We'll, of course, get your take as well on the first 6 months of the Trump administration. We got plenty to talk about. We continue now live in studio with John Lott, author of More Guns, Less Crime, Understanding Crime and Gun Control Laws, which is now in its third edition, which is really impressive. That really was a groundbreaking book. And his latest book, The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies. And to that end, your latest study out of their Crime Prevention Research Center really analyzes the amount of concealed handgun permit holders in the country over the past recent history, and it does dispel quite a few myths, most specifically about the African-American community and women in America. We were told that women are the ones who hate guns the most in this culture, and to be pro-Second Amendment means you're not going to get the women's vote, but what do the stats show?
Right. Well, it's good to try this again, this half hour.
We're back.
And so I appreciate you having me on. Yeah, well, there's been a huge growth in the number of concealed carry permits. You go back to 2007, there are about 4.6 million. Right now, there's something over 16.3 million permit holders. That's almost a fourfold increase that we've had there in 10 years. And not only that, but over that same period of time, there's now 14 states that either don't require a permit at all to carry or just in some areas within the state, these so-called constitutional carry states. So the number of people who legally carry has grown even much more than that fourfold increase. But you're right. What you see is that there's been some real demographic changes that have occurred since 2012. While the percent of men with permits has gone up by about 22%, the percent of women with permits has gone up by 93%.
Wow.
And
that's an astounding number.
Right.
And that's from year to year? Or
that's over the 4 years from 2012 through 2016.
Hmm.
And so now women have about 36% of the concealed carry permits in the United States. And you've seen a big change in terms of minorities, too. Blacks, over that period of time, increased their permits by about 30 percentage points more than whites did. And we don't have data for too many states, but Asians seem to, at least in the states that we have the data for, have increased by far the fastest of any group.
Are those of us who honor and respect and exercise the Second Amendment whenever possible, are we winning the argument? Are we winning the ongoing dialogue in America? And is that why you're seeing this growth from people saying, yeah, there's nothing wrong with protecting yourself?
Right. No, that's an excellent question. I think you can explain a lot of everything from whether people want more gun control to gun ownership by looking at a few simple questions that you see in polls. And those are, does owning a gun in the home make you safer or not? And over the last 4 years, at the same time that we've seen this big increase in concealed handgun permits for women, we've seen kind of a sea change in women's views on this. You now have a majority of women who believe that owning a gun in the home makes them safer, as opposed to making things more dangerous to have a gun in the home. That's a big change. And you've seen a similar change, though not quite as large, for blacks. And I think that helps explain why people are willing to have the guns in the home.
Where do things stand in the District of Columbia at this point? You know, I think the landmark Heller case, I think, made people think, okay, fine, not only is this going to make a difference in the district, but also nationwide, but there still seems to be some sort of speed bump here with people being able to exercise their Second Amendment right in the nation's capital.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously now it's at least legal to be able to own a handgun in the home as opposed to what it was before. But what you have happened is there's been attempts to be able to legally carry a gun outside the home. And there's something like 124 concealed carry permits that D.C. has actively issued right now.
And is it still such that only that one person, the chief of police of the District of Columbia Police Department, this one person is now the king of all carry permits?
You have two different types of states, basically. You have so-called right-to-carry states or these constitutional carry states where once you've met certain requirements, you know, you're a law-abiding citizen and the right to carry, you pass a background check, you pay your fees, undergo training, you can automatically go and get the permit then. In these other states, you have to demonstrate need. So one of the things that we did in this report was we were able to get a list of the permit holders for Los Angeles County. As of January, Los Angeles County had issued 226 permits for an adult population of almost 8 million people. And what you're immediately struck by when you look at this is these are all politically connected, powerful people that get this. And you know, nationwide, as I say, you have 36% of women have concealed carry permits. In Los Angeles County, it's 7%. You have half the population in Los Angeles County is Hispanic, but you only have about 6.5% of the permits going to Hispanics in Los Angeles County. Only 5% of the permit holders in Los Angeles County are Black. So basically, not only do you see few permits there, but the people who get the permits are, you know, politically connected, powerful people. If my research convinces me of anything, it's basically poor people who live in high-crime urban areas, the people who are most likely to be victims of violent crime, particularly poor Blacks, are the ones who benefit the most from having the option to be able to go and protect themselves. But, you know, when you have a democratically controlled county like Los Angeles, you know, living in a dangerous area won't get you any place in terms of getting a permit.
And
even a death threat won't get you a permit. You have to have something more and above that, some type of connections or something else to be able to go and get a permit. And I don't have the list of permit holders for D.C., but from what I've seen in terms of the zip codes that they live in and things like that, it's pretty clear that it's only, you know, well-to-do, probably politically connected individuals who get permits in Washington, D.C. also.
And to that end, here's a headline. December 30th, 2016, the end of this last year in the L.A. Times, where they were doing a wrap-up on the year's criminal activity in L.A. County. Violent crime in L.A. jumps for third straight year as police deal with gang and homeless issues. Concealed permits down, violent crime up. That sort of goes along with the narrative, doesn't it?
Right.
At least our narrative.
Look, police are extremely important. My research convinces me police are probably the single most important factor for reducing crime. But the police themselves understand that they virtually always arrive on the crime scene after the crime's occurred. And the question is, what should people do when they're having to confront a criminal by themselves? And having a gun is by far the safest course of action.
John Locke continues with us live in studio here. And in the next segment, we're going to talk about the Trump effect, how the Trump presidency might be affecting gun ownership in America and concealed carry, and whether the Obama effect really was what we thought it was. 888-630-WMAL if you want to jump in on the conversation. It's 414 on WMAL.
Live and local, you're listening to The Larry O'Connor Show.
Dan Savage, progressive, liberal, hysterical pundit and commentator, he appeared on Bill Maher's Real Time there on HBO, and well, as typical, I can't really play the cut without a whole lot of bleeps and blips and things like that. But he articulated a myth that I would love for you to address here. He said that because the scary Black president isn't coming for your guns anymore, not that he ever did, Dan Savage says, and the shrill lady wasn't going to come for your guns, gun sales now went off the cliff after Trump won the election. Now, there's a whole lot in there. Let's unpack it for a minute, John Lott. The first is that people were buying guns because they were afraid of the scary Black president coming for their guns. And secondly, no one's buying guns now because Trump won the election. What's that all about?
Right. Well, I mean, first of all, gun sales did go up during the Obama administration, but if you look at kind of where it spiked and when it went up, it'd be after he would be making calls for gun control. It wasn't because he was black or just had been elected. Right. It was because, you know, after Newtown in January of 2013, when he went out there and pushed really hard for a bunch of gun control proposals, people were concerned. But, you know, gun sales haven't fallen off the cliff since the election. November had kind of record NICS background checks. The main thing that people look at are background checks. That's kind of an imperfect measure because if you buy one gun or three guns, it still counts as one check.
I see.
But, you know, in some months, it's not quite at the level of the record rate that was last year, but it's still not far behind. In May, we again set a record for that month. So it's kind of some months it's setting a record, others it's kind of the second highest for those months. But, you know, you look at concealed carry permits, we were talking about those. Those have continued growing at almost the same rate after the November election as they were beforehand. And so I think for something like that, which we have hard data on, I think people are just concerned about their safety. You see things like when there's been these mass public shootings or other things in the United States, and even sometimes those abroad drive spikes in that. But people are just coming to believe more and more that guns will make them safer. I think those explain it more than just the race of the president or the gender of a presidential candidate.
But when you're trying to make a larger hateful, I mean, there's so much packed into that statement by Savage, which I think is agreed upon and believed by so many on the progressive left and the commentariat, that crazy right-wing gun nuts arm themselves when they don't like the color of the president in the White House, you know. Right. and now they're fine with that. I would think under President Trump that gun owners and Second Amendment advocates would feel a little bit freer to exercise their Second Amendment right and go ahead and get their guns in their arms. In fact, to that end, other than the nomination of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, and he's a pretty Second Amendment-friendly justice. What other indications do we have from this Justice Department or from the Trump administration that this is a healthy climate for gun advocates?
Well, one of the regulations that they reversed, they passed 14 bills reversing regulations that had gone into effect at the end of the Obama administration, changed some new Social Security rules that they had. The rule that they had was basically if you received help on your finances, so for example, my mom has given my sister power of attorney to go and handle her finances because my mom hates to use computers. My sister pays her bills for her and does things like that. But just because my mom has my sister pay her bills doesn't mean that my mom's mentally incompetent to be able to go and defend herself if that was necessary. But the Obama administration wanted to define that as evidence of mental incompetence broadly, and that would ban somebody from being able to go and buy a gun. The Trump administration reversed that.
To that end, I think one of the most insidious things that came out of the Obama administration was the idea of restricting, quote-unquote, people suffering from mental health issues from being able to obtain a gun. And I know people in my life, I know, who would benefit from psychological work or talking to a therapist. They didn't want to seek out a therapist because they were afraid that that would then put them on a list of some kind.
You know, it's interesting. I'm sure lots of Democrats would say, well, you know, you don't want to put somebody with HIV or something on a list because that would discourage them from getting help. They understand that point perfectly clear on that. But when it comes to something like mental health, you know, they don't seem to understand that point at all. And, you know, it's interesting. There's obviously a huge range of mental health issues that people can have. People with mental health problems actually tend to be less violent on average, and they tend to be more likely to be victims of violent crime than people are generally. But to go and just say, you know, blanket mental illness, it makes people afraid to go and do, you know, get the help that they may need in some cases.
John Lott with the Crime Prevention Research Center is our guest in studio. We'll have a little bit more time with John. I want to ask him about how things are shaping up in the governor's race in Virginia, most specifically with a lot of outside money coming in. Hello, Michael Bloomberg. We see you there. with regard to restricting your Second Amendment rights. Well, will the gun issue be an issue in Virginia? I know I ask each of the candidates when they come on where they stand on it. I want to know if John Lott thinks it's going to be an important decision maker for you, the voter, in Virginia. Keep it right here on WMAL.
The stories that have been breaking while you've been at work. This is the Larry O'Connor Show.
Coming up, a playwright, Michael Hammond, who used to work on The Hill at a pretty high level. He's got a fascinating story. You'll like it. And Dr. Sebastian Gorka joins us on the 5 o'clock hour to talk about the first six months of the Trump administration. But we wrap things up here with John Lott. Again, his latest book is The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies. Everyone's watching the Virginia governor's race and, frankly, all of the down-ticket statewide races as well. We're seeing a lot of money coming in to support Ralph Northam and all the Democrats. How do you think the gun story, gun issue plays in Virginia?
Well, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of money with regard to the gun issue coming in. Bloomberg, last time that they had the state Senate races, he put like $3 million into just two state Senate races. Yeah. Unbelievable amount of money. He won one and lost one of those two, and that, but he needed to pick up both in order to switch control
of
the Senate there. And you know, the thing is, Bloomberg spends unbelievable amounts of money on these state legislative races. People focus on the fact that he spends $25 billion on the congressional races, but he spends at least that amount on state and local races around the country. And I guess one thing I'm a little bit afraid of, you know, when a party has the presidency, they tend to lose the state legislative races. And so people, Bloomberg's going to still spend a lot of money, and people may interpret that as Bloomberg's message winning out this time.
No, it might just coinciding. Then, but if Ed Gillespie doesn't shy away from the gun issue and embraces it,
I think it'd be an important issue to differentiate himself.
Thank you, John Lott. Thank you. Keep it right here on WMAL.